discounts will be included at the end of the order.
Hey, let me, before I kind of start officially, this is the unofficial beginning. Pull this postcard out. It's in your bulletin. It's one of 75 items in your bulletin. I called Guinness to see if we broke a record on how many inserts, but we're some church in New Zealand had like 17 in there, so we got a long ways to go. Anyway, this is coming up in 2 weeks, actually. And what I love about this, if you look on the back, there's three things we're doing. But in 2 weeks, we're doing the food drive and parking lot party. What I love about it is while we're just thankful that we're going to have a year under our belt as a new church here, that we're not just celebrating us, we're partnering with the community and doing this food drive. And so I'm hoping the Westbury Neighborhood Association, which is literally across the street, I'm hoping we can overwhelm them with the items that they need. You can find out what those items are on our website, shelterrockchurch.com/Westbury, or to simplify things, in the back table, there's a list of everything that they need. And connected with that, to let people know about this event, this postcard will be mailed, but we also have door hangers that we're seeking to do all around the area. And so we have put together these envelopes with 50 door hangers in them, and then a specific geographic area in which to do it. And you'll be happy to know there's also a little prize in here. It's actually not a prize, it's a thank you. It's a free ice cream cone from Nana's. So if you like ice cream, then like do 3 or 4 packages worth. You know, you can go crazy. Or if you know you don't have any date money, just do some door hangers and you'd be hooked up. So you can get those right after church. All right, commercial over. Now let's begin. So if we haven't met yet, I apologize, I should have introduced myself. My name's Greg, and if we haven't met yet, let's change that. All right, come say hi to me afterwards. I would love to know who you are and how you found out about the church. But I have been at Shelter Rock Church for 7 years. Westbury location's only here for one, but as Craig mentioned, we have a Manhasset location and a Syosset location. But over this 7 year period, if you do the math, we've had approximately 365 Sunday messages, just like this one is. But of those 365 messages, I believe only 3 have been on money, giving, that kind of a topic. If I'm generous and say 5 of them have been on the topic, that means approximately 1% of our Sunday messages have been on money or giving. We can do better and we need to do better, and here's why. 1 out of every 6 verses in the New Testament talks about money or possessions. Jesus taught more about money than he did about faith, than he did about heaven or hell, than he did about prayer. That's kind of eye-opening. In fact, 30% of Jesus' parables were about money and possessions. So, in order to make up for lost time, we're going to teach on money every Sunday for the next 2 years. I'm kidding! Relax! No, but that is why I'm very excited that we're doing this 3-week series on money, on finances. And combined with that, we're going to kick off, it's actually a 9-week study, a video course called Financial Peace University. We're actually going to show you an excerpt from it. And in your bulletin, there's a list of locations where that study and other group studies are happening. But if you're interested in doing it together, the community center, just to the right, before you get to the parkway, about 5 blocks to the right, the Westbury Community Center, we're going to meet there Thursday nights and do the study. It's not going to start for a couple weeks yet, so you have time. But anyway, I'm excited about it. And the reason is because this series and this Financial Peace University study is not just about dollars and cents. It's actually about our hearts. Let me tell you my hope for these 3 weeks. It's that we as a church maximize our redemptive potential in our community and in the world. If God can get our church to a place where we say to God, everything I have is yours, that will mean God has our heart. And when God gets our heart, the potential of what he can do in us and through us is unlimited. If we learn to practice financial stewardship, meaning we're just stewards of God's stuff, then we will see changed lives. We will make an impact in the community, and we will have a hope-filled world. You hear that? See, the primary illustration for this series is money. But this series is really about spiritual growth. See, there's numerous ways for us to grow spiritually. We can read our Bible, we can pray, we can fast, we can do small group participation. But properly using our finances is another way to grow spiritually and another way to learn to rely on and trust God. We are surrounded by money. Tiny was pretty good there. We think about it. We work for it. We invest it. We save it. We worry about it. We fight over it. Right or wrong, money is a status symbol that attempts to define us and consume us. But we're not going to let that happen. See, today in the next 2 weeks, we're going to hear from three primary voices from the Bible. We're going to learn what Solomon, known as the world's wisest man, what he has to say on the topic. We're going to learn what the Apostle Paul has to say. And we're going to learn what Jesus has to say on the topic. But today, Solomon speaks. So why Solomon? Well, just some background. Solomon was the third king over Israel. He had Saul, he had David, he had Solomon. And literary and cultural tradition has long associated Solomon with wisdom. You find out some of that background in the book of 1 Kings. It's one of the books in the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures. And in that, God appears to Solomon in a dream. And he says to Solomon, ask for whatever you want me to give you. Right? It's kind of like a genie in the bottle, except this was real. Right? God says, I am here. Ask for whatever you want. Solomon is overwhelmed with the responsibility of being king, of his role as leader of Israel. And so he asks for wisdom. That's what he wants. Here's God's response. Chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. God said to him, since you have asked for this and not for a long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never be, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. That's pretty awesome. And did he do it? Well, you skip ahead. Chapter 10, you learn this. King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. The whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom that God had put in his heart. And one of those people was the Queen of Sheba. And she had heard about Solomon, and the scriptures tell us that she came to test Solomon with hard questions. And here's her experience. Here's what she says. This is her review that she tweeted out, so to speak. She said to the king, the report I had heard in my country about your achievements and your wisdom is true, but I did not believe these things until I came and saw with my own eyes. Indeed, not even half was told me. In wisdom and wealth, you have far exceeded the report I heard. So that's why we're going to hear some wisdom from Solomon. He's a guy who had wisdom. He's a guy who accumulated an incredible amount of wealth. In fact, there's about 100 verses, Bible verses, where Solomon addresses the topic of money and how to handle it. And so just to kind of sum those up, I basically put those together in three big ideas. So this is kind of the big idea, that each of us, we can have a healthy relationship with money by practicing three instructions from Solomon. Number one, work hard. Number two, save. Number three, give. Now, that's not rocket science, is it? But this is the foundation that the world's wisest man, the world's richest man, said that we ought to do. So let's start with the first one, work hard. Now, with the work hard mindset, typically many of us have kind of this mindset about work.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
That's how we feel. And I've heard people say, yeah, work, it's a curse. And it's because of the curse, because of Adam and Eve, now we have to work, and it's just exhausting. But that's actually incorrect thinking. Work was not given to us as a curse. Look at Genesis chapter 2. This isn't what Solomon says, but I'm just laying a foundational verse here for work. The Lord God took the man, Adam, and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to take care of it. This was before he and Eve decided to go fruit shopping. This was before they disobeyed God. God said, work is valuable. Work has a purpose. I want to give you a purpose in your life. Here's the plan. Work the ground. Till it. So work can be and ought to be a blessing. If we see it as a curse, then we have to change our mindset. Here's what Solomon has to say about work. Proverbs 10. Lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring work, bring wealth. Essentially, he's saying we need to have a good work ethic, to work hard. Proverbs 12. Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. Now, as a guy who likes to chase fantasies and goals and dreams, I realize that that's about discipline. Right? God puts things on my heart and mind that I'm interested in and I pursue. But I can't do that at the expense of my work or my family. I got to work hard. I have to be disciplined. So I work the land and have abundant food. The apostle Paul, we're not highlighting him here, but I'm sneaking him in because he has a great word for us on work. Colossians chapter 3. Check this out. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It's the Lord Christ you are serving. So whether you are employed, whether you're a student, whether you're a stay-at-home parent, we are to do those things not because we're working for the man or, you know, trying to get good grades to please someone. We're working for the Lord. This is ought to be our motivation. And work can be something more. Work can be more than just bringing home the bacon. If you're old like me, you remember that commercial. Anyway, if it's more than just making an income. It's about an opportunity to build relationships, an opportunity to actually minister, care for people where they're at. I want to show you this video that kind of talks about this very thing. Check this out.
Work. Most of us spend over half our lives at work. Whatever it is you fill the 9-to-5 with, planting crops, building cars, taking care of patients, teaching students, or running a business, work is where most of life happens. For some, work is a drain. They dread Monday mornings, forcing themselves to struggle through because they need the paycheck, while many times feeling trapped and beaten down by their job. Some people love their work. They're good at what they do. It energizes them. It's a place of security, a place to chase dreams, desires, and success. At work, they find fulfillment. We often forget to connect our faith to our work. We don't consider the reasons God may have us at our job. We don't think about the purpose and meaning we could bring to our work. We simply focus on how it makes us feel. But what if we saw our work as an opportunity to worship? As Christians, we are called to serve Christ with our lives. For a few, that means working as a pastor, a youth minister, or a missionary. Others serve the church by teaching children or singing in the choir. But when Sunday is over, most of us return to our jobs outside the church. For us, our mission is in the marketplace. We may not be the kind of missionary who moves to the far regions of Africa, but around the conference table, around the water cooler, around the cubicle, we have an opportunity to worship the God who created us. He gave us skill. He gave us passion. He gave us work. When we do our jobs with excellence and integrity and diligence, it's an act of worship. We are displaying God's craftsmanship to the non-believing world around us. We are earning the right to be heard. We don't see a divide between Sunday and Monday, between the sacred and the secular. We've been invited into parts of the world that a pastor or a traditional missionary will never see. We have conversations with people who would never set foot in a church. Whether we love or dread our work, we choose to turn the focus away from ourselves and toward the mission God has for us. Church is not the only place we worship, and Sundays are not the only days in our calendars that have meaning. Every day on Mission for God brings us great joy. Like the heroes before us, we can be modern-day Noahs and Josephs and Peters who are called with a purpose. God has designed us. He created us to work and to worship. For us, work is worship.
Do you ever think about that work, whether you're a student, a stay-at-home parent, or you're working out in the field, as mission, as having a purpose beyond a paycheck? I mean, the reality is, one of the quotes there is, you can have conversations with people that would never step into church. That doesn't mean you have to stand up on the desk and, you know, yell about Jesus. It means you have a chance to love people, care for people, ask how they're doing, pray for people, building relationships. Work hard. It's not just about money. It's about having the opportunity, an opportunity to communicate love and care to people. So, you want to have a healthy relationship with money, Solomon says, work hard. He also says this, save. Be a saver. Proverbs 6, he says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Solomon, like, hold on, man. You're coming at me kind of strong here, calling me a slug. But go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. I love that. You know, when we're feeling lazy, just go to the ant. See them working. Proverbs 21. He says, the wise store up choice food in olive oil, but fools gulp theirs down. When I see that verse, I think of, I'm a big fan of Hostess Snowballs. You guys familiar with that delicacy? I'm a huge fan. But, you know, you got to kind of pace yourself. Well, I can't always pace myself, all right? One day I was in 7-Eleven or a similar type place, and I wasn't going to buy them, except it was the bonus pack. Normally there are two, but today there were three. The same price. I'd be a fool not to get it, so I got it. Got some milk. Great combination. First one, amazing. Went down so wonderfully. The second one, twice as nice. It's the third one. I was a fool. I ate that third one, and it took me probably months before I would take a snowball again. I was just a little sick after that. And that was me. I was a fool gulping it down. I should have been wise and stored it up for a rainy day. Anyway, I'm kind of just having fun instead of staying focused. Look, a bird. No, staying focused. Proverbs 30. This isn't Solomon, but he picks up on Solomon's ant illustration and says, ants are creatures of little strength, yet they store up their food in the summer. So we're to be savers. But we as Americans, generally speaking, are not good at that. Let me give you an illustration. When you think about the number of adults who have no savings set aside, 26% of us, statistics say. How about thinking about retirement, saving away some money for retirement? 36% of us have not yet started doing that. Okay, these are the stats. How about just general savings, taking our money? What percent of us will take some money from our paycheck each week, each month, however you get paid? Well, back in 2012, there was 10.5%. That was the rate. It's not very good, but it's a lot better than 2014, when only 4.4% of us. And I don't have the latest stat, which based on that trend is probably good news. So, need to be savers. What are some next steps? What are some ideas for being a saver? Here's one. If your work does kind of an auto pay, where they just do a direct deposit into your bank, you can establish that you want 1, 2, 5, 10% automatically set aside to your savings account. You can do that. If you're in a job that has like a 401k, you can determine some of that money to go, you know, towards that. Another idea is get rid of those credit cards and pay cash. Do you remember cash? Anybody ever see that? We don't really use it that often. But if you want to get out of debt, if you want to spend wisely, make it a discipline, make it a habit to pay cash. Because a lot of times we think, oh, that's a cool thing, whatever it is, I want that. I don't have the money, but I got the plastic. I'll just get it. And then you find out they actually want the money. Another idea, set aside your coffee money if you're a coffee person, if you go to the movies a lot. Just instead of going to Starbucks every day, multiple times a day, you know, pick a percentage of those when you don't, and instead you put that money, you know, aside. It will accumulate. And if you want to just kind of practice, actually, I'll save that idea. That's for the next section. So, work hard, save. One more. Solomon says, we need to give. Be givers. Proverbs 3. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Now, he's talking to an agricultural society, first fruit of all your crops. If he was talking to stockbrokers, right, he'd say, honor the Lord with your wealth, the first fruit of all your stocks. If he was, you know, talking to someone in the undergarment industry, you know, with the first fruits of all your socks, you know, athletic supporters, you get the idea, you know. So that's the context here. But first fruits, meaning, hey, right off the top, God has allowed me to work, God has provided, and so my first give back, whether I write a check or give online, is to God. Proverbs 11. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. That's interesting. That's counterintuitive, isn't it? One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds, it's mine, but comes to poverty. And that's the beautiful upside-down world of faith with God, of Christianity, of believing that, hey, it's all God's. If I'm going to freely, you know, give, then I'm deeming myself a reliable, faithful person, and God will provide some more. If I'm going to hoard it, God's not going to give it. All right, let me give you some ideas of how to practice this. There's an author I like named Randy Alcorn, and he came up with this list, 40 questions to ask God relating to finances. But let's have fun. Let's spin that wheel. Let's put that up there. And what you're going to see here, there's going to be 10 different places this clicker can fall on. And one of them is a huge prize. So for your sake and, you know, for mine, I hope we hit that. But this is actually voice activated. So we have to yell for it to start. All right, so it's on the count of three. Let's just go, ah, all right. 1, 2, 3, ah. Anything? Oh, see, that wasn't very good. Yeah. So let's kind of muster it up here, all right? One, two, three. Ah! There you go. There you go. All right, let's see. Huge prize, huge prize, huge prize. Yep. All right, number four. So I'm going to read, of the 40 questions, I selected 10. And here's what number four says. This is the question for God. If I make a list of all assets you've entrusted to me and ask what you want me to give away, is there anything I'm leaving off the list? Is there anything I'm treating as if it were untouchable, as if it were mine, not yours? Retirement funds? Don't they belong to you too? Wow. It's getting a little personal there, Randy. But that's fair, right? Do we really believe it's from God or not? If so, does he have access to it all? It's a question worth asking. All right, let's go back to the wheel. And because I love you, I'm going to tell you, it's really not voice activated. I just had fun, you know, getting us to yell. So go ahead and spin that for us. If you want to yell, feel free to anyway. But huge prize. Come on, baby. Come on. All right, number eight. Last service got a huge prize. All right, what do you got for number eight? A question for God. Am I living to hear others say of me, he's a great success? Or to have you say to me, well done, my good and faithful servant? That's a great question. Let's do one more. Angel, spin that wheel. All right, come on, let's go home happy. Huge prize. Huge prize. Oh. All right. Number five. What we got for number five? Question to God. Would you ever say to me when I stand before your judgment seat, you blew it. You sold those shares and gave them to feed the hungry and evangelize the lost, and then 2 years later, the market peaked? Or would you say, well done, my good and faithful servant? These are great questions. There's a list of 40 that is a bit overwhelming, so I'm not going to share that. But if you would like a list of 20, just put on the back of your card, give me the list. And you can put in parentheses, and a prize, a huge prize. No, and I'll email you the list. Obviously, we would need your email address if you want that list. Make sure we have it. But those are great questions. So some next step ideas on what it means to be a giver. Right, we talked about working hard. We talked about being a saver. But being a giver, one practical application is to begin regularly giving at church. If that's new to you, jump in. If you've been doing that consistently but want to be challenged, do you tithe? You know, that's kind of an Old Testament term for a tenth, giving a 10%. I've heard people say to me, well, that's not, you know, that's Old Testament. We're free to give whatever we want in the New Testament era. Yes, you're free to give over and above 10% if you want. But if you want to get started, a good challenge is start at that 10. How about another idea? Support one of the missionaries that we have. Sponsor a child. The Westbury Neighborhood Association is right across the street. They would gladly put your money to use buying food and materials that people in the community use. How about just being a blessing? And the next time you go to the movies, buy your ticket and for you and your friend, and then prepay for two more tickets that people behind you, get. If you do that, tell me. I want to go behind you. So, but just stuff like that. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Yeah. Have some fun with it. Just learn what it means to be a giver. Some additional next steps that apply to all of these. Attend the next 2 weeks of this series. Next week we're going to look at what the Apostle Paul says about money and then what Jesus says. But the other is participate in Financial Peace University. It's a 9-week study, and we're going to do it all over, but as a large group, there's going to be a bunch of us at the community center, about 5 or 6 blocks up the street here to the right. Thursday nights, your little insert says 7. It's wrong. It's 7:30. But that's going to happen. I want to show you a clip. It's an 8-minute clip just to give you a feel for how this works and the style of the teacher. And then just as a heads up, a couple minutes into it, we're actually going to receive our offering, just because it's kind of, it's a long video, so we're gonna multitask. So if you have that yellow card, if you wrote out a prayer request, or if you know, you're new, just drop that in. Check this out.
Welcome to Financial Peace University. Financial peace. These are words that just don't go together in our culture anymore. Too many people are struggling with this subject of money. Too many people are struggling with this subject of money in their relationships, in their marriages. Too many people are struggling with this subject of money in their area of their careers. We just don't know what to do with this whole thing called money. Well, I found out something about money. Money's actually fun if you got some. Boy, I tell you what, it does weave its way into the tapestry of our lives, and it does mess with us on just about every possible level. So we're glad you're here. I can promise you this, we are going to have some fun as we talk about money. We're going to laugh, we're going to cry, I'm going to talk to you about relationships, I'm going to talk to you about your spiritual walk, your emotions, and we're going to change the way we handle our lives around this subject of money as we go through this class together. It's absolutely imperative that you really stay plugged in. Now, some of you have, you just didn't want to be here. We're drug here against your will. I know that because I was out in the parking lot and I saw several sets of heel prints on the way in. Some of you, Dave Ramsey, the name has become a cuss word in your house. Some of you, one lady, I was doing a book signing a while back and she said, you know, I don't even know you and I don't like you. And some of you, that's you. I understand. I get that. We are going to have some fun, and if that's you, I'm probably actually more on your team than on the team of that nerd that brought you. I'm a guy that's been there, done that, got the t-shirt. I grew up not rich. How many of you grew up not rich? When I got out of college and graduated from college, my wife and I got married. We were so broke we couldn't pay attention. We didn't know what we were going to do. When we graduated from college, our net worth was a half a box of no-dos. You know what I'm saying? And we got married and started off our lives broke. How many of you, when you started off basically broke? You know what I'm talking about. We ain't got money, honey, but we got love. And it's a good thing, too, because we ain't got no money. Well, that's how we started out. And I started buying and selling real estate, and I got rich. At least by a kid from Antioch, Tennessee standards. I ended up with about $4 million worth of real estate, starting from nothing by the time I was 26 years old. However, I had done some dumb things. Nothing immoral, nothing illegal or anything like that. I didn't steal from anybody. I didn't lie to anybody. I was just stupid. I borrowed too much money. And our largest bank got sold to another bank. And then word got out on the street that Dave was in trouble. And another bank got sold to another bank. And they started calling our notes. And we spent the next 2.5 years of our life losing everything we owned. We were sued. We were foreclosed on. And finally, with a brand new baby, a toddler, and a marriage hanging on by a thread, we were bankrupt. I was a 28-year-old young dad, young husband, scared out of my mind. I didn't know what to do. I remember standing with that shower so hot in my face that I could just barely stand there, and I would just stand there and cry. Because I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any steps. No one talked about this stuff much. And then I started slowly discovering that the Bible had some things to say about money. I started reading a man named Larry Burkett. And then I started reading another guy named Ron Blue. Met another man named Howard Dayton. And these men had been teaching biblical finance throughout North America, and I started learning from them and started applying those principles in our lives because we were so beat up, we didn't know what to do. And see, I had all these letters and licenses after my name that says I'm supposed to know something about money. I've got a finance degree. And there I sat broke. Apparently, something was wrong with my plan, and I needed a new one. You see, I do everything backwards. Most people meet God at the bottom. I met him on the way up. I just got to know him on the way down. What we're talking about here is that we found the truth. Let me show you what I'm talking about. Everybody stand up for a second. Here's what I want you to do. I want first, Understand that I can see all of you and I will mess with you if you don't play my games. What I want you to do is I want everyone in here to close your eyes. Thank you. Okay, now, here's what I want you to do. With your eyes closed, even if you don't know the answer, it's okay to be wrong. It's just not okay to not play. You got to play. So even if you don't know the answer, you got to guess. I want you to point north. Keep your eyes closed and point north. Now, stick with your plan. Stick with your feeling. Open your eyes and look around. Someone is lost. According to my compass, north is right through here. Now, I won't point him out, but one guy was pointing this way and he did a little cheerleading move. Everybody have a seat. The point is that this is the truth. That is north, that is the truth. And we live in a culture today where people think they can make up their own truth. You can't make up your own truth. There's a truth that's independent of you. And your feelings are often not true. Some of you went with your best feeling. You had no idea, and you launched off going south. If you want to go to Canada, this is the direction. You can get there this way, but it's the long way around. This is the truth. This is the truth. And to the extent that you are not lined up with your compass, you're what's known as lost. And you're going to bring pain to your life, and you're going to bring shortage to your life, and you're going to bring problems to your life. I know. I've lived that. So, how you feel really doesn't matter. And we have to remember that it's about choices. Personal finance is about 80% behavior. It's only about 20% head knowledge. That's why God chooses to work through money to change and transform us. For some of you, he's going to use this issue of money to heal your marriage. For some of you, he's going to use this issue of money to put discipline in your life in a place and in a way that you never dreamed you would see it. You're going to make different choices after having gone through this. It absolutely works. Financial Peace University began about 20 years ago. I started it with a bad suit and an overhead projector. The typical family going through Financial Peace University pays off $5,300 in debt and saves $2,700. That's an $8,000 change in position is the typical person or the typical family going through this. And so if you pay a little bit for this course and you go through it and you get $8,000 change, I call that a bargain. I call that a good buy. This whole course is taught by me on video. And afterwards is when the most important thing happens, and that's the small group discussion. Go to the small group discussion. Bring your budget each time and be accountable to the lesson. Make sure you're learning the lesson. Unpack this with other people. It feels a little weird at first, but go in there. The accountability to change your behavior is the key. That's the big deal, and you're definitely going to want to do that. Again, there is no doubt that this process called Financial Peace University works. The only question is whether you're going to be involved. And so if you haven't signed up yet, now is the time.